it's great to be here, and I want to just thank you for inviting me. I know Stuart invited me, and some of you had no choice in the matter. Hopefully by the end, you will have been encouraged and built up and strengthened in God, and therefore you'll be glad that we came. I want to actually bring you a little gift by way of beginning, and it's some sand from Swansea. And this is kind of related to what I'm going to talk about. Well, in fact, it's very much related to what I'm talking about. But I wanted to bring you some sand from Swansea because I know I met Carl and Stuart and Sarah and Philip. I met you at Catalyst, and it was lovely to meet you guys. And I remembered Carl's description of Bryn Mawr, and I didn't think there was many beaches around here. So I wanted to, one, bring you some sand, and I wanted to give it to Stuart. If you guys come to Swansea next week, you can get some of your own. So I just want to give you this present, first of all. But there's another reason, and I'm not going to suggest that you put this in your building when you get it, because I know you get chapels, don't you? And then they get the plaques on the wall that says, Ethel gave the chairs, and you can never take the chairs away, and you can never take the plaque away. So I'm not suggesting you do that with the sand. Don't drink it, though, Stuart, even though it's in a bottle. But the reason I wanted to bring that to you, actually, was because it's a very helpful thing, and I wanted to encourage you, Stuart, and encourage you as a church. You see, I met you guys at Catalyst, and one of the things about Catalyst which was great for us as a church and for you guys that came was this. It reminded us that we were part of something bigger. And there's a promise. In fact, you could describe the whole Bible like this. The whole Bible is one promise. It's about a promise that's coming, then a promise that is fulfilled, and a promise that will be fully completed one day. And that promise was the promise of Jesus. And if you're familiar with the Bible, you'll know there's a passage in Genesis 22 where Abraham has just done something very significant, been very obedient to God, and God then speaks to him. And God says to him, through you, I am giving the world a promise. And the promise is that your descendants, through one descendant, will number the sand on the seashore and the stars in the sky. And I think later on he even refers to dust. So if you haven't got sand, and if you're in Wales and you can't see the stars at night often because of the clouds, we've still got the dust. And why I find that an encouragement, and I wanted to encourage you guys, and I want to give that to you, to remind you as a church to remain part of something bigger. To remain part of something bigger. Because sometimes, you know, you're no different to us. We're small in number. And it feels like a big world, even just a big town. And we've got a big city. And you go, we just feel, you know, we're nothing like the church down the road that's got 500 in it. But actually, if you line up 500 grains of sand, and you line up 40 grains of sand, there ain't a fat lot of difference. Because they only really matter when they are poured out on the beach of history, which is the church that God has been building. And he's been building it since Abraham and that promise. And I just want to encourage you guys, therefore, I noticed at the back you've got your little sign. Stuart doesn't know I'm going to say any of this. I'm just going to, I know he wants me to say it though, even though he's never mentioned it to me. There's a little thing at the back that says about Catalyst. I want to encourage you guys to start saving now, to sacrifice your hatred of camping, to find B&Bs. I don't care what it is. I'm saying get to something like that. Come to Swansea next week. Whatever means possible, just to remind yourself that you're part of something bigger. Because that is the promise of God for us as people. I also want to encourage you in Fraser. I hope you'll be particularly encouraged by what I'm going to speak on. Because what you spoke out, and you spoke out during the worship, was so relevant. So very relevant. But I want to, as I get into what I wanted to say today, I want to start with two conversations and share with you two conversations by way of introducing what I'm going to say. I'm just going to move my keys, otherwise they're going to irritate me. Okay, so the first one was I had a conversation with someone at work. And I was going to speak on this particular subject. In fact, when I spoke on this subject from the Bible, to be honest, when I read it, I just thought, oh, you know, I was doing a series and I came to this particular part and I just thought, oh no, how on earth? I read it, I just thought, wow, this is going to be awful. I've got nothing I can say about this that's any good. And actually, by the end, I felt God really reveal something to me through this story that made it one of the best stories of them all. And so I was saying to somebody at work, oh, I'm going to speak on this subject. And I said, it's one of the best stories of them all. And they were trying to guess what that story was. And they said, is it the story of Esther? I said, no. Is it the story of Ruth? You know, the book of Ruth in the Old Testament? No, it's not. Is it the story of David? No, it's not. No, it's none of those things. So they were coming up with all their stories. And maybe you've got a story now you're thinking of. Oh, yeah, the best story of them all in the Bible. And I said, no, it's a story about a guy called Jacob. And this person said to me, oh, not Jacob. I don't like Jacob. I hate Jacob. And actually, when you read this story, your initial reaction is, Jacob, he's got nothing good going for him. But I think you'll appreciate him by the end. And hopefully by the end, I think that you as a church and you as individuals will be strengthened, built up and helped. And I think it's such a great story that it's a real privilege. I love speaking on him. It builds me up and it strengthens me and encourages me, and I hope it will do the same for you. So that was the first conversation. The second conversation was on a train. It was some years ago now. And I was sitting on the train opposite a gentleman at a table, and he was reading a book, and I asked him what he was reading, and it was a book on Buddhism. And so, seeing an opportunity to talk about spiritual things and maybe witness, I started a conversation with him, and we began to chat. And as we chatted and we discussed the various things about Buddhism that he believed and his worldview and the way he understood things, and I also then started to share about Jesus Christ. And it became apparent to me as he shared his understanding of Buddhism that it was really about this. It was about a life being lived to earn God's favor through what he did. It was to be good to earn God's goodness back, to be good to earn God's grace. And then I thought, well, here's my opportunity. So I started to share with him that I had a completely different belief system. I had a belief system which meant that God had showed his goodness to me. And as a consequence of him showing his goodness to me, I was now called by him to live a life of goodness in response rather than to earn it. And I said, this goodness that God has given me, I said this to this guy, I said, I can't earn it. It's given to me free of charge. And his response to me was, that's crazy. In fact, I would go so far as to say he was offended by what I said. He was staggered and he was provoked and he was offended. He could not believe that I could have a belief system where God would just give something to me out of his goodness and not my own. And I said to him as we parted, because we obviously came to a stop and he was getting off, I said, you've got to understand, I said, that's why it's called the gospel, which means good news. That's why. But I don't think that conversation is that unusual. You see, I think it's a conversation that has been happening time and time and time and time again through. People have been having that conversation for years. It's the conflict on those who will rely on their goodness, which was a bit like you were saying, Fraser, people who rely on their family background or whatever it is. They're relying on something in order to be accepted by God. And then the other people who are saying, I can rely on nothing but God and what he's done for me to be accepted by him. And the thing about it is that both sides of the conversation all want the same thing. We all want to be blessed. We all want a life of contentment and satisfaction and relationship and to be loved by God. And you were, again, Fraser, you were talking about, we want to be loved by God. There's not a person in this world who doesn't really, truly, deep down, want to be loved. Want to be loved. And so we all want that life of peace, happiness, contentment, acceptance. Both the guy opposite me and myself on that train. It's just how we get it is the crucial thing. And one of the first times that conversation took place was with Jacob and his brother Esau. And you may not be familiar with this story from the Old Testament, and I'm going to sort of share it with you and tell it as we go. But if you want to look at it later, it's in Genesis chapter 25 to about Genesis chapter 28. Say, if you read that story, that's the pivotal, to me, the main beginning of the story of Jacob. And it begins, Jacob's life begins, obviously being born in Genesis 25. His mother is Rebekah. She's a middle-aged woman, and she's not had much success bearing children. And she's married to a guy called Isaac. And she falls pregnant with twins. And it's actually quite a difficult pregnancy, and she can't really work out why this pregnancy is so difficult. And so she actually asked God, and she said, God, what is happening? I guess she didn't have a midwife or any kind of stuff like that. So she just goes to God, and she says, God, what's happening here? And she feels God speak to her, and he says, you've got twins. And these two boys that are going to be, they will be rivals. And one will be stronger. One will be stronger than the other. But the older will serve the younger brother. And the day of birth came. And the first one that comes out, and I love the Bible sometimes, it's so descriptive. It says the first one comes out, and it was very hairy baby. Can't really quite imagine what that looks like, can you? Does that mean it was really, really hairy, or was it just like it had quite a lot, a mop of hair, you know? But anyway, it says it was very hairy. So they called him Esau, which I think means something like hairy. And then they said the younger one, the second one came out, the second of the twins, and come out, and it was like he was grabbing the heel of Esau. And so they decided, not very creative, are they? They decided to call him the grasper, which also actually was a word that meant deceiver. And he was almost grasping Esau's heel as he came out. And this was an interesting family, the family of Rebekah and Isaac and then Esau and Jacob. Because like many families, and I guess most of your families and my family too, they made choices throughout their family life that had a lasting impact on their children. And a lasting impact on their children's children. And I guess we can relate to that. We can relate to things that happen in our own lives that we're still living with now, that was maybe choices that were made within our family. For example, I mean, I guess calling your son something which sounds like deceiver kind of sets the tone for his life, doesn't it? Calling your other son maybe something like hairy gives him a kind of like, you know, a complex to begin with. And one of the other things these parents did, they chose favorites. You see, Isaac kind of, he chose a favorite, you know, and that's a destructive thing to do in a family, to choose favorites. And Isaac chose Esau. And Esau, it tells us in Genesis, it tells us that he was a bit of a man's man. You know, he was a hunter, and he was skillful, and he loved meat. And he was like that kind of character. If he was a performance guy, he was up there. He was scoring high. Yeah? And then he says that Rebecca, the mother, she had a favorite. And she chose Jacob as her favorite. And Jacob was a guy. He was a much more, it would appear, sort of gentler character. He preferred, well, what we do know about him is this. He didn't want to go out hunting. He preferred to stay at home, cooking. And I guess that would have been quite unusual then. So the first thing they did was their parents chose favorites, which wasn't a great thing. And maybe, I don't know, maybe for some of you guys, your parents chose favorites. I like to think I was my parents' favorite, but I probably wasn't, I don't know. But we just live with those realities, don't we? Whether it's true or not, and whether anybody ever intended it, maybe you feel you're the one that's the favorite of some people, and other people you feel like you're nobody's favorite. And then there was another interesting moment in Esau and Jacob's life. You see, Esau was the firstborn son. He was important in terms of what he was going to receive. And he came to a pivotal moment with Jacob one day where Esau was hungry. And he came home and he was so hungry, he said this. He was quite dramatic. He said in Genesis 25, verse 30, I am starved. Give me some of that red stew. And then Jacob saw an opportunity. And Jacob says this to him. He says, all right, but trade me your rights as the firstborn son, which was a big deal. And Esau says, look, I'm starving of starvation. What good is my birthright to me now? And Jacob says, first you must swear that your birthright is mine. So Esau swore an oath, thereby selling all his rights as the firstborn to his brother Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and lentil stew. Esau ate the meal, then got up and left. Just in case you wonder what happened, that's what happened. But Esau rejected what he'd been given by birth. He sold his status, his position as firstborn son, for a temporary pleasure. How many people have done that? How many people have sold something that was given to them for a permanence, for something temporary? We can relate. The thing about it was this, that once the temporary pleasure of the meal had gone, Esau realized he'd been stupid. And in looking for someone to blame other than himself, he blamed Jacob. I think Jacob saw an opportunity, but he hated Jacob for it. And now Esau only had one more opportunity to receive a blessing from his father. He'd sold the main one, the firstborn. He now had one more opportunity. And that would come when his father was nearly dead. But then as the story continues, Isaac therefore gets old, nearly at the end of his life, and he asks Esau to go out and get the best meat for the best meal that he can cook him, so that he can give Esau the blessing that is due. But Rebecca, she's there and she overhears this conversation and she thinks, here's an opportunity. So she finds Jacob and she says to Jacob this, now listen to me, my son, do exactly as I tell you. Go out to the flocks and bring me 2 fine young goats. I will use them to prepare your father's favorite dish. Then take the food to your father that he can eat it and bless it before he dies. So Esau's gone off to look for the best meat, and Rebekah has now planned with Jacob that they can steal the blessing, the second final blessing from Esau. This isn't Esau's fault now. This is Jacob conspiring and planning with Rebekah to deceive the father. The firstborn son's out there hunting, trying to get that best meat and best meal. And the younger son is at home, planning to steal it. So then what happens is Rebekah takes Esau's favorite clothes, which were in the house, and gave them to her younger son, Jacob. She covered his arms and the smooth part of his neck with the skin of the young goats. Then she gave Jacob the delicious meal, including freshly baked bread. We know how nice that is. So Jacob took the food to his father. And Jacob said, my father. And Isaac said, yes, my son. Who are you? Is it Esau or is it Jacob? And Jacob replies, it's Esau, your firstborn son. I've done as you've told me. Here is the wild game. Now sit up and eat it so you can give me your blessing. Isaac asked, how did you find it so quickly, my son? And Jacob says, the Lord God put it in my path. Do you know what I mean? You read this story and you think, how can we enjoy Jacob? What a liar and deceiver and conniver and other names you could probably think for him. And then the story continues, Genesis 27, from verse 21. Then Isaac said to Jacob, obviously thinking he's Esau, come closer so that I can touch you and make sure that you really are Esau. So Jacob went closer to his father and touched him. And Esau says, well, the voice is Jacob, but the hands are Esau's. And he didn't recognize Jacob, because it says here that Jacob's hands felt hairy just like Esau's. So Isaac prepared to bless Jacob. And then he says to him one last time, maybe there's that seed of doubt in Isaac's mind. He says to him, "Are you really my son, Esau?" And Jacob says, as if he's got one more opportunity to tell the truth, Jacob doesn't. He says, "Yes, I am." And then Isaac goes on to bless Jacob with this incredible blessing, the blessing that I just talked about with the sand and Abraham, the same blessing Abraham bound to Isaac. He then blesses who he thinks is Esau, and it's Jacob, and he gives him this blessing. And then a short while later, Esau returns with the best meat, ready for the best meal. And he discovers that the son, the younger brother, has stolen the blessing. And he's devastated. And not only is he devastated as the firstborn son and the older brother, he's devastated, but the father, Isaac, is devastated as well. They cannot believe that they have been deceived by Jacob. And Esau says out loud, "No wonder his name is Jacob. For now he has cheated me twice. First he took my rights as the firstborn, and now he has stolen my blessing." From that time on, Esau, it says, hated Jacob because their father had given Jacob the blessing. And Esau said this, "I will soon be mourning my father's death, and then I will kill my brother Jacob." And then we read on, and it says, not surprisingly, Jacob realizes his life is now in danger, and he decides to take a runner and run away. And we think, well, great. I mean, I read it, you know, you go, good riddance. Yeah, let's get rid of this guy. I mean, what a nightmare. But the story takes another twist. You think, well, surely God's not in that. And then we read that Jacob travels on. Genesis 28. It says this. Meanwhile, Jacob left Beersheba and traveled towards Haran. At sundown, he arrived at a good place to set up camp and stop there for the night. He found a stone to rest his head against. That was awful, that. And lay down to sleep. And as he slept, he dreamed of a stairway that reached from the earth up to heaven. And he saw the angels of God going up and down the stairway. And at the top of the stairway stood the Lord. And the Lord said to him, "I am the Lord, the God of your grandfather Abraham, and the God of your father Isaac, and the ground you are lying on belongs to you. I am giving it to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be as numerous as the dust of the earth. They will spread out in all directions, to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. And all of the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants, Jacob. What's more," God says to Jacob, "what's more, I am with you and I will protect you wherever you go. One day I will bring you back to this land and I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you." Huh? He's a liar. He took God's name and used it deceptively. There's nothing redeeming about this guy. And then God speaks and affirms the blessing. Jacob's not the best character. He's not had the best upbringing. He's not got the best relationships. He's not a guy you think, oh yeah, just like, you know, Esther and David and Ruth. I mean, I can see where they're good. This guy is not good. But here's the shocking truth about this story, do you know? Jacob's name is not a name that we should forget. Jacob's name is a name that not only are we to remember, we're to actively remember it. We're to go to ourselves, I need to remember the name of Jacob. I'm not meant to just forget about it. I'm not meant to kind of embarrassingly acknowledge he's there, a bit like one of those dodgy uncles you've got. You kind of got to remember he's there, and you've got to kind of, you can't completely deny him, but you kind of want to forget about him. Do you know what I mean? He's not. He's a guy we may go, no, we embrace him. We remember him. We think of him. We love him. And one of the reasons we do that is because in God's eyes, he is a person that the blessing of Jesus Christ will be fulfilled by. But here's the thing. There's a story, okay, in the book of Exodus, chapter 3, and you may know it. And it's the story of Moses. And Moses is coming to the end of his working day. He's out in the field somewhere. I think he's on a mountain, isn't he? And he's on a mountain. And he suddenly catches his eye, this bush that's burning. And it's not burning up. And he thinks, that's a bit odd. I'll go and have a look at that. And God speaks to him. And God says to him, when Moses is asking, who are you? And God is saying to him, I want you to go to Egypt and tell Pharaoh to let my people go. God replies to Moses. He says, I am who I am. Very, very well-known part of the Bible. Say this to the people of Israel. I am has sent me to you. God also says to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, you go, yeah. The God of Isaac, yeah. And the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my eternal name. The name to remember for all generations. The God we worship today is the God of Jacob. It's the God of Jacob. Jacob is associated with God. But more amazingly, God associates himself with Jacob. He loves Jacob. He chooses Jacob. He calls himself the God of Jacob. He does that for us. He does that for you as a church. I don't know what people out there think of you. I don't even know what you think of yourselves. But if you're a church that follows the God of the Bible, you're a church, therefore, that God associates his name with. If you're a person who's put your faith in the promise that came to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, then you're of one that he associates his name with yours. So the God of Philip, the God of Dan, the God of Carl. He's the God of you all. It's an amazing story. That despite Jacob's character, and despite his circumstances, and despite the terrible choices that he made in his life, God chose him. And he's been repeated throughout history. Age after age, town after town, city after city. Because it's a conversation that's been going on throughout history, the conversation of Esau and Jacob. And I guess my question is this, and this really links to what Fraser was speaking out during the worship, is which one are you in the conversation? Are you an Esau? Where you're relying on your background? You're relying on your skills. You're relying on your goodness. You're relying on who you are. Are you that kind of person? Or are you a Jacob? Where you think, oh, I've got nothing going for me. What have I got going for me? Man, if you hid my history, if you knew my struggles, I feel like most of the time in life I'm cheating and I'm deceiving and I'm desperately trying to get the way of life that I think this guy Esau's got. I want to encourage you. The way of Jacob leads to Jesus Christ. The way of Esau just leads to a dissatisfied life. The way of Jacob leads to Jesus Christ. And the way of Esau leads to a dissatisfied life. In order for us to enjoy and embrace our relationship with Jesus, we have to realize that we are the ancestors of Jacob. In other words, there's a bit of Jacob's DNA in all of us. And in fact, you can't come to Jesus and you can't continue with Jesus unless you realize there's a bit of Jacob in you. You can't. I think you said, Fraser, we're all equal here. We all start from the same place. We all start like Jacob did. But there's a final twist in this long-running family saga. You see, there's a slight difference between the story that we read in Genesis and the story that is fulfilled through Jesus Christ. And it's this. That the blessing and promises of God for us are not found in a plan between a mother and a younger son. It's found in a plan between a father and the firstborn son. It's a divine plan. You see, the plan that the Father and Jesus came up with speaks a better word than the plan of Rebecca and the plan of Jacob. Instead of it being a plan that is planned in order for us to deceive the firstborn son and the father, it's a plan that's come up by the firstborn son and the father for us, the younger brothers. It's a plan that was given to us. And it's for all the Jacobs in the world, for the undeserving, for the unmerited, for the unworthy, for the tax collector, for the prostitute, for the last, for the lost, for the least and the lowest. It doesn't matter where you fit in that. But that's the plan. And that's the twist to this story. That it's a conspiracy and a plan that was created in heaven and not on earth. And so it's for all those in Swansea and it's for all those in Bryn Mawr and wherever. And this plan is one where Jesus, the firstborn son and the father, planned to take the best clothes, Jesus' perfect life, and give them to the younger brother to wear. They weren't stolen. Jesus put himself on the cross in order that we might have his righteousness. He's given us his righteousness. That's the difference. Is a plan where the meal that would secure the blessing was Jesus' broken body. That's what we celebrate and remember when we have communion together and take the bread and wine. We're remembering the twist in the story between Esau and Jacob, that it wasn't something that Esau was deceived by, but he gave it up in order that his younger brother might eat and have the blessing himself. The Father and the Son planned to put it in our path. So what does that mean for us? It means this, that next time you fail, next time you fall, next time you stumble, and the Bible says in James, we all stumble in many ways. I want to encourage you guys, remember, you're the ancestor of Jacob. Remember, there's a bit of Jacob in all of us. And next time you fall and stumble and you're thinking and you're acting and thinking more like Esau, I've blown it, God's not going to want to know me, I won't go to church because he won't want to see me until I get a level of performance back up and I'm back up to a level when I'm okay to go again. Next time you think like that, remember that is a nonsense. You're not in the way of Esau, you're in the way of Jacob. And God is happy to be associated with us. He's the God of Robin. He's the God of you. That's awesome. And we can live our lives lying and cheating and grasping and trying to and trying to live a life with God where we think if we can just deceive God and trick God into believing that we're good, we'll be okay. And I go, it's a nonsense. That's not the plan that we're meant to be part of. The plan we're meant to be part of is we're meant to be part of a plan where God says, I give it to you despite who you are. Despite what you've done last night. Despite how you feel this morning. That's the God we come and worship that we're to remember. So I want to encourage you, because I know there's so many Christians in this life who basically do stuff wrong, do stupid things in the week. I'm one of them, okay? And then you get to the Sunday or whatever it is, or whatever context, or maybe just meeting with other Christians or whatever, and you go, well, I better not go. I can't do anything. I failed. And I just go, that is a nonsense. The reason we come is that we celebrate that we're the God of, we worship the God of Jacob. There's a bit of Jacob in all of us. And here's the wonderful thing. This is what happened and will happen one day. One day, I'm going to die. And then I'm going to find out whether the promise was true. And I'm going to appear before the Father. Like Jacob did. And the Father's going to say to me, come closer. So that I can touch you and make sure that you really are Jesus. Jesus is the only one he's going to accept. And I'm going to go close to the Father. And the Father's going to touch me. And he's going to say, the voice is Robin's. But the hands of Jesus. And he's going to feel the hands of Christ. Because I've been crucified with Christ. And Christ has given me his clothes to wear. Isn't that amazing? Isn't this one of the best stories of them all? That he's going to say. And I love Carl, so I'm going to use Carl. And I'm also beginning to love you over there, Dan, as well. If I met you today. I spent a little bit longer with Carl. The voice is Carl's. The hands are Jesus. The fragrance is Jesus. It'll be the same for us all. And when he catches the smell of the clothes, he'll smell the obedience and perfect life of Jesus Christ. And we'll get in. And receive the blessing of all blessings. And it won't be because we deceived. It was because the Father and the Son conspired to give us the blessing. Isn't that amazing? I hope that builds you up and I hope that encourages you. I genuinely believe you as a church are going to have loads of Jacobs. We're all Jacobs, yeah? But you're going to have some people who are obviously Jacob amongst you. I genuinely know that. And guys, I just think this is such an exciting story for you. Because you need to know, don't you? You need that message. You need to get that message to these guys. There's a bit of Jacob in all of us, you know? Let me tell you about this guy Jacob before you write yourself off. I just want to encourage you guys, be a church full of Jacob and speak about the plan of the firstborn and the Father. That you'll be a church full of people whose testimony is this, that I'm going to stand before God and he's going to say, the voice is mine, but the hands are Jesus. Isn't that wonderful? Can we just pray together? Father, what an amazing plan thought up by you and not by us. And we thank you that there is nothing that we can do apart from let the older brother bless us. And we thank you that our confidence is not in us, but in the older brother who lived a perfect, obedient life and gave up his clothes for us and became the meal for us that we might receive the blessing from you. And so we leave this morning encouraged to know that you are the God of Jacob, and therefore you are the God of us, and that there's this bit of Jacob in all of us, and we therefore thank you for him, and we thank you for his story and his life, and we say it is a privilege and an honor to be associated with him, because you have associated with him yourself.